Right. Okay, so I want to share with you two different, very exciting commentaries on Parshas Vayera that have some very far-reaching ramifications. Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate it. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Hamashiach Lamei Hamashiach Lamei Hamashiach Lamei. Okay. First one is from the Rav Shitzirov. The Rav Shitzirov, as I've shared with you in the past, authored a sefer called Zera Kodesh. One of the things that's interesting about the sefer Zera Kodesh is that the Rav Shitzirov left in his, I don't know if it was a formal or an informal will, that he did not want his Torah printed. Despite that, his chassidim, after his passing, decided that they were smarter, and they went ahead and printed it. The fellow who printed it died within the month of its printing. Somebody else dismissed it as being coincidental. They did a second printing, and the second guy who printed it died within a month of its printing. The third printing came a little bit slower. Huh? Is what it is now. It's not printed, but I'll tell you an interesting outcome of that was that when I've shared with you, we've learned some of the works from Rabbi Yitzchak Yoel of Kantakuz, who was my father's great grandfather. When I was rummaging through my father's papers when I was a kid, so I found a stack of manuscripts. This was behind his desk in the old office. He had a closed door there, and he was out of town once, so I decided to check it out. So I found a bunch of very interesting things. In fact, the Peleoyetz documents, thank God, were back there also, the ones that I printed. So I found this manuscript, and I said to my father, what is this? So he told me it was Rabbi Yitzchak Yoel's Divrei Torah, but that there was a tradition in the family that Rabbi Yitzchak Yoel did not want his writings printed. At the time, I took the manuscript and I went to several Gedolei Yisrael to see if they would give me a release. And they, after looking through the Ksavim, saw the quality of the person, knowing who he was and what he said, and knowing the story that happened with Rav Shitzirov, nobody wanted to tamper with it. So those documents are still unprinted. Rav Shitzirov says as follows. The opening words of Parshas Vayera. So he again, this is not intended in any which way to be an actual interpretation of the words, lest anybody think that this has anything to do with Pshat. What he's really using the Psukim as a springboard to help us in our service of Hashem. He says that the Ribbono Shel Olam, there's a famous teaching from the Baal Shem Tov on the Pasuk, where the Pasuk says you can be in the most distant place in the world, and there too you will find Hashem. So Rav Shitzirov says that one of the most effective methods in battling our Yetzer Hara is to learn from the Yetzer Hara himself. The Pasuk says, Me'oivai t'chakmeni mitzvesecho ki li'oilam hili, a Pasuk in Tehillim. From my enemies, I become wise in your mitzvahs, for forever is he to me. So, quoted from earlier sources, the Baditchavirov and Kedushas Levi says it several times, that when a person is being attacked by the Yetzer Hara, we really need to learn from our Yetzer Hara itself how to battle evil. Take a look. Each one of us throughout our lives has foiled our Yetzer Hara's plans numerous times. Baruch Hashem, everybody can say that there have been numerous times that we've had a desire to say something horrible about somebody, and we didn't do it. We did it plenty of times that we did do it. But there were many, many times that we didn't, right? And there were numerous times that we wanted to eat something we shouldn't eat, and we didn't do it. And so we could go through all these things. And despite all the times that we beat our Yetzirah, moments later he recovers and comes at us from a different angle. And you have to be impressed by the industry that the Yetzirah puts forth. Says the Rav Shitzirov, we need to learn not to become discouraged by our failures. Who should we learn from? We got to learn from the Yetzirah himself. The Yetzirah doesn't get upset when he fails. He comes right back at us with a whole new approach, a whole new attitude. We can't afford to become discouraged from our failures. We should learn from evil itself, just like evil doesn't become discouraged. And he comes at us despite that. We need to apply the same industry, the same creativity, the same lack of tiring to our battle with the Yetzirah. So he says like this. He says, the word mamre should ring a bell in your minds about mamrim hayisem im Hashem yemdati yaschem. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Klal Yisrael, you've been rebellious against Hashem since the day I got to know you. The word mamre comes from rebellion. So he says, vayera elav Hashem. If we're in a really bad situation, the Yetzirah has got us by the throat. He's about to do us in. And we're looking for God. We need HaKadosh Baruch Hu to help us out of the situation. You know where we find Hashem? Be'eloine comes from the word of Eloine, means the strength of Mamre. We have to learn from the strength of rebellion. Take the motivation from the strength of the rebellion itself and use it against the Yetzirah. We have to be able to take it just a half a step back and say, wow, this Yetzirah is so impressive. And after all, what is he doing? He is doing the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem sent him to try to ensnare us into an Avera, and he doesn't let up for a second. We need to apply that same industry and that same creativity. Vayera el Hashem. We're looking for Hashem in this awful situation. Where do we find Hashem? Be'eloine mamre, in the strength of the rebellion. Go look for HaKadosh Baruch Hu right there in the very fact, in the effectiveness of the Yetzirah. That's where we're going to find HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the darkness itself. He then says that we need to be aware of where the Yetzirah begins. He says, we're all familiar with the fact that rarely does the Yetzirah come to any given person and say to them, you know what, Buddhism is the way to go. It's just not how he approaches us. Chazal tell us that the Yetzirah approaches us slowly, gradually. It's that the story my father tells with the fellow who's in the army, and he gets a call that, Schmidt's father died. So the colonel goes and calls out the private and says, Private Schmidt, your father died. And the guy keels over, faints right away. So the general calls him over and says, that's not the way you do it. You got to break it to them slowly. You don't go say your father died. That's not fine. A few days later, call comes in that Pepperoni's mother died. So now he's going to learn his lesson. So the colonel calls together the entire group. He says, all right, everybody who's got a mother, step forward. Not so quick, Pepperoni. That's the Yetzirah. The Yetzirah doesn't come at us all of a sudden with the thing. It's a not so quick, Pepperoni kind of guy. He's like, to take it slowly. So the Rav Shitzirov says that it's a little bit like infections. For an infection to attack a person, it needs to have an entry point into the person's being. V'hu yoshev pesach ha'ohel k'chaim hayoim. V'hu, the evil inclination, sits and waits by the opening of the tent in the heat of the day. Says the Rav Shitzirov that the opening of the tent refers to the person's speech. Iker Milchemes Hayetzer, he says, the main battlefront with the Yetzirah is to guard one's mouth, because that's the easiest entry point for the Yetzirah. Because once the Yetzirah has got a person with Lashon Hara, Rechilus, with a nivel pet, then he owns the person and can do with the person what he wants. So therefore, v'hu yoshev, when we want to identify where we need to be on the greatest guard, it's v'hu yoshev pesach ha'oil k'chaim hayam. Anyway, he then goes on to speak about the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam will not allow us, even if the Yetzer Hara has attacked us, and we have fallen, that we need to pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and go on the counterattack, using the methods of Torah and Avodah and Gemilas Chasadim, using all three pillars of the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to go on the counterattack, and that's really the rest of that piece. But the Avodah that we learn from this piece of the Rav Shitzurov is how to utilize, this is one of the methods that they use in self-defense, is use the attacker's energy against them. And that's what the Rav Shitzurov is suggesting here, is that we need to take the motivation from the Yetzer Hara. If he is so industrious in his work, then when we're caught right in the thick of things, we have the ability or the responsibility to say, if that's how creative and how industrious he is, I, as a Ben Yisrael, have the ability and the responsibility to take it even further. Having said that, I would like to share with you another thought, and this is really based on a mimer from the Kozhik Lover Rov, one of Uncle Howard's best names, the Kozhik Lover. The Kozhik Lover Rov was a disciple of the Avnei Nezer of Sachachov. He was most famous because he became Rosh Hashiva after Meir Shapiro in the Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin, in the great Lublin Yeshiva. That's where he became Rosh Hashiva. He was a brilliant, brilliant man. And his sefer is, lightning, brilliant thought after brilliant thought. Many of them are not necessarily geared to Avodah, but this one has really magnificent ramifications in our service of Hashem. Quotes of Medrash. The Medrash says, Ein kol Shabbos v'Shabbos she'ein koyrim ba parshas shalait. That there is no Shabbos that passes that we don't read the parsha of Lot and his daughters. I don't know where you daven, but in our shul, we don't read the parsha of Lot and his daughters except for once a year, Parshas Vayera. So, this medrash is an astounding medrash. There's no Shabbos that you don't read the Parsha of Light. Now, it's interesting, the commentaries on the medrash say that this is a typo. That really, in the original print, it was an acronym that said Shin Vav Shin, which should have been Shana Vishana. There's no year that goes by that you don't read the Parsha of Light. Then they printed the new medrash, and they wanted to make it easier for people to read it, so they opened up the Rosh HaTevis. So whoever opened it up wrote Shana Medrash Shabbos V'Shabbos. Those types of errors and answering questions that way cause people to become apikorsim, because then you can't believe anything you read, because anything could have been an acronym, and you have no idea what it meant. So some of the commentaries write that there were shuls that used to read the parasha of Lot and his daughters every Shabbos, just to speak about the slippery slope, how dangerous the slippery slope is. The Kozhik Lover Rov says that there's a deeper meaning here. The Medrash says as follows. The Pasuk says, Matzosi David Avdi, I found my servant David. Says the Medrash, Heichon Matzosi Yosei, where did I find David? So David was lost. Where is David to be found? Pistoim. David HaMelech is found in Sodom. Now, Rabbi Friedman, last week's parasha, brings some very fascinating contrasts between the legacy of Sodom and the legacy of David. For instance, you find that the pasuk says about David HaMelech, "Vayimleich David al kol Yisrael." Pasuk in Shmuel Beis, Perek Ches. David reigned over all of Israel. David mishpat amai, and King David did mishpat utzdaka, justice and charity lechol amai. Says the Gemara, you'll excuse me, but those two terms are contradictions. If it's mishpat, it's not tzedakah, and if it's tzedakah, it's not mishpat. How do you have David HaMelech doing mishpat utzdaka? How can he be both a judge and be charitable at the same time? Says the Gemara, here's how David HaMelech used to judge. He'd call it, two litigants would come before him. He would adjudicate the case. He would rule, and then if the guy who he ruled against couldn't afford it, David HaMelech took the money out of his own pocket and paid the bill. So first, it was Mishpat. First, David HaMelech was a Shefet. Then, if the guy couldn't afford it, it was Tzedakah. Contrast that with what we read yesterday about the city of Sodom, that the plight of the city of Sodom was sealed. Because what happened? A young girl saw somebody dying of hunger on the street and gave the guy something to eat, and they executed her because she was nice to somebody. Right? Says the Gemara, where did I find David Avdi? David's lost. Where do I find him? I find him in Sodom. There's no greater contrast than the legacy of David and the legacy of the city of Sodom. So what is this, I'm finding David in Sodom? So the Medrash says, it's a Zohar, not a Medrash. The Zohar asked the obvious question. Both last week and this week, you find time and time again Avraham Avinu's caring for light. Now, light is not worth caring for. I mean, he is a nephew, but he's the kind of nephew that everybody wants to, you know, not have. So, Be'elachim light. He goes from Haran, light's with him. They come to Eretz Yisrael, he's splitting land with light, he's caring for light. Light goes in and is taken captive. What does Avraham Avinu do? He puts his life at risk and goes to war with the king, the war with the four kings and the five kings. For whom? For light. For what? Why? Why is this light worth Avraham Avinu risking his life? Says the Zohar, at the beginning, the tzav abruach hakodesh, the zamin, the mepach, minei David. Says the Zohar that the reason that Avraham Avinu pursued, kept care and watched out for light was all because David HaMelech was destined to be born from light. The Medrash takes it a step further. The Medrash says, on the pasuk, and vigam leloit ohelech es Avram hayatzoin uvakar ve'oyhalim. The pasuk says that with Lot, who went along with Avram, had sheep and cattle and tents. Reb Tuvia by Yitzchak Amar says, Reb Tuvia by Yitzchak, who were the tents? Shnei oyhalim. The tents were two tents. Rus hamayavia v'na'ama ha'amaynis. They refer to Rus and Na'ama. Those are the two tents. Both of them were contained in light, right? They were both the descendants of light. So what the Zohar and the Medrash are telling us is that Avraham Avinu wasn't looking out for light at all. Avraham Avinu was looking out for David who was the result of Rus, and in fact, the Shlomo Melech's legacy came from Naama, because Naama was the mother of Rehavam, the son of Shlomo Melech. So in fact, the kingdom of Klal Yisrael came through, in both ways, came through light. Now, so what do you have? You have, at surface level, you have something which is rather lowly, coarse, right? Light, not any great shakes. And Avraham Avinu is able to pierce the facade and recognize that contained deep inside of light are these sparks of Kedusha, which ultimately are going to be the kingdom of Klal Yisrael and Mashiach. So that seems to be entertaining. What does it have to do with us? Says the Kajik Lavrov, the Targum Yoinesin Ben Azil says, on the Pasuk in Balak, Usruas Melech Boi. Trua, what's a trua? Trua is like the sound of the shofar, right? The Pasuk says, Usruas Melech Boi, the sound of the king is in him. Says the Targum Yoinesin, V'yivavois Malko Meshicha Miyavivo Beinehoin. The sounds of the King Mashiach resonates, calls out from among the Jews. What the Targum Yonasan is saying is that every Jew has within himself a ha'ara, a spark of Mashiach. But it's concealed. It's hidden within us. During the week, during the days of the week, so it's completely dormant. It's covered over by the running around, the carpooling, and the all the rest of the activities that go on during the week. But on Shabbos, we're told that there's something called a Neshama Yisera. What's a Neshama Yisera? So most people define the Neshama Yisera as an extra appetite, because you eat much more on Shabbos. But that's a distortion of what a Neshama Yisera is. A Neshama Yisera is that we're gifted an additional level of Neshama. And the Sfasemis talks about this very often. He says, what's the point? We know that on Matzah Shabbos, we smell Besamim, because Vay of the Nefesh, woe upon us, we've lost the soul. Everybody knows the feeling of being given something and then having it taken away. So if the Rebbe Shlomo is going to take it away every Matzah Shabbos, why are you giving me something and then taking it away? What's the point? What do we get out of it? And why don't we celebrate this Neshama Yisera? Says the Sfasemes that the goal of the Neshama Yisera is that a Jew is to define themselves as a Neshama. The goal is, as somebody asked Rachel this past week, do you have a neshama? So she said, no, I am a neshama. This is one of one of the seminary classes that they do in Eretz Yisrael. Do you have a neshama? No, I am a neshama. How do we define ourselves? The problem is that we walk around at best saying, we have a neshama. The goal that the Rebbeinu Shlom wants is that we should define ourselves as we have a body. I am a neshama and I have a body. Right? That's the total. These are two polar opposite attitudes. I am a body, I have a neshama. I am a neshama, I have a body. Those are two polar opposites. The weekday, we get so busy with the body stuff that at best, we are a body, we have a neshama. Comes to the Rebbeinu Shlom and says, I want to drive home this point to you. I want you to see to it, to really integrate into your system. You are a neshama. You are a neshama. So what I'm going to do on Shabbos is I'm going to illuminate a greater component of the neshama. In fact, some of the commentaries say on the opening of the parasha, the pasuk says, "Kichoyim hayoyim." Why was Avraham Avinu sitting outside in the heat of the day? Say Chazal, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hoitzi Chama Min Artika, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the sun out of its sheath. So the commentaries say that everybody lives in a different level of concealment. Each person has their own level of concealment. There's some people who the Rebbeinu Shleilam's involvement in their lives, the Rebbeinu Shleilam's existence, his truth, his ashgacha, is absolutely obvious. They see it every step of the way. There are no qualms about finding the hand of Hashem. Hand everything over to the Rebbeinu because it's absolutely clear. There are others who just hope, you know, that somebody once described the scene in a waiting room to an operation, you know, an operator. So one person says, Rebbeinu Shleilam, look, I got great doctors. Do me a favor, just stay out of the way. As long as God doesn't get involved, it'll be fine. And the doctor can handle this. Right? Another person says, it's all the Rebbeinu Shleilam. The doctor is just a mere shliach of Hashem. They're very, very different perspectives as to how, you know, what are we saying? Rebbeinu Shleilam, I can handle this business deal. Please, give me a bracha. Right? Or, Rebbeinu Shleilam, this is all in your hands. Very, very different perspectives depending on how obvious, how exposed the Rebbeinu Shleilam is. In fact, some of the commentaries point out here with Avraham Avinu, and the Kosher Club himself talks about this, a very fascinating thing. I think we got into this conversation here at one point. And that is that if in the time to come, there is no Yetzer Hara, what's the point? What's the point of existence? What's the point of serving? If there is no struggle, what's the value in the service? So he explains, and he proves it. He says, what's the difference between a tzaddik and a chassid in Chazal's terms? A tzaddik is a person who's able to overcome his evil inclination. A chassid is a person who's able to eradicate it. He worked so hard, to the point where he's eradicated evil. Now he's smooth sailing. So why don't we ask the same question? What's the point? What's the point of the service that he does once he's eradicated his the evil in his life? You know, there's no challenge anymore. What's the point of his service? You see from there,
huh? You can still improve the service.
I mean, it's not a struggle. So his point is that if you struggled up until a certain point, and from that point on it's smooth sailing, that the reward, there is reward for that service because you had to struggle so much to get there. It's a little bit like to take any challenge that we've mastered. I had a person who struggled to keep kosher. So for years there was temptation. They get beyond the temptation, so it's okay, so then there's no challenge anymore in it. Maybe we should go back. That there is no challenge anymore?
I mean, let's use your example of the chesed, and it's like there's an underlying assumption. If there is no challenge and you've totally overcome your evil inclination, that you've then therefore reached perfection. In other words,
in that
overcoming
area,
an evil inclination isn't perfection. It's like, okay, I'm not tempted by bacon, but could I do whatever extra?
Right, so again,
it's like there's a missing concept.
Well, the point is that there is a level where a person is totally there. And that's how we're supposed to view the time to come or the world to come, is that there is no longer any challenge on any level.
Isn't that an arrogance of trying to be Hashem?
No. It's the point the person has reached their potential. There's nothing more that they can do. If that's the point, what's the value? See, that's not true, because we see in each of our lives, nobody has ever recommended to anybody, you know what, after 5 years of keeping kosher, go in and have one cheeseburger just to start it again, so you can struggle once again. Nobody's ever said that to anybody, because it's ridiculous. The point is that you're still rewarded because there was the struggle. If you've mastered it, and you're now smooth sailing in that area, you continue to reap the rewards. The service continues to be valuable because it took struggle to reach that point. Let me just finish what he says. So he says that Avraham Avinu, we're told, up until the Bris Milah, had struggled with everything and had perfected himself except for that one area. His only challenge that was left was the performance of the Bris Milah. The moment he performed that Bris Milah, to him, he had come to full heavy summum. He was perfect. He had come to a level of perfection. As a result, was Hoitzi Chama Min Atika. The sun was taken out of his sheath. There was no longer any concealment for Avraham Avinu. It was all out in the open. There was nothing that was hidden from him anymore. He was totally out in the open. The Gemara uses that same language as far as what happens in the time to come. In the time to come, it says that Hashem is going to take the sun out of its sheath. The wicked will be judged by it, and the righteous will bask in its light, because they were the ones who created that light. They were the ones who, in each instance, looked at everything and said, "This isn't what it appears to be." I mean, the Sfasemis is obsessed with this in this week's parsha, year after year after year. He talks about the fact that every person has the various arlas, the various coverings that cover their perspectives. And our work is to stop looking at the outer shells and to pierce the shell and to see everything for the godliness that it really is. As a result, we live a much more exalted existence. That Avraham Avinu, by performing the Bris Milah, came to the point where for him it was Hoitzichama Menatik. It was a completely bright, illuminated world. There was no longer any concealment. Then he wanted to say something. The way the Kashuk Lover concludes that piece is he says that what happened here with the guests was that Avraham Avinu came to this point of perfection. As a result, he no longer needed physical mitzvahs to continue to perfect him. So Hashem brought the sun out of its sheath and said, there's no longer need for you to perform mitzvahs. And Avraham Avinu said, no, as long as I'm alive, I want to grasp every opportunity to perform mitzvah. That was the struggle, that was the battle going on between Hashem and Avraham at that point, was that Avraham wanted to continue to perform mitzvahs. And Hashem said to him, you can perform them, but it's not going to accomplish, it's not going to make the impact that you need, because you've done it already. Let's go back to this Shabbos issue. Now, the Pasuk says, Vayar Avram, last week's parasha, Vayishma Avram, Avram heard ki nishba achiv, that his brother was taken captive. So he says that Avram says the Zohar is the neshama, and he saw that the nitzutz, the spark, was taken captive by the weekdays. It says that what happens is that our physical lives come and hijack our neshamas to the point where our neshamas don't perceive their own majesty. So Avraham Avinu goes to battle to see to it that no Jew will ever be complacent with their accomplishments in the physical world. And that was the essence of the battle of Avram, the four kings with the five kings, was that Avram saw to it that for the destiny of Klal Yisrael, that no Jew would ever be happy, will ever be able to be satisfied with just trudging through life as everybody else does, that their soul will continue to torture them, that spark of Mashiach is going to be so annoying, will drive the Jew mad until the person goes and looks for something deeper and more meaningful in life. And that's the meaning of no Shabbos goes by that we don't read the Parsha of Light. It says, just like the entire essence of what went on in the Parsha of Light was that Avraham Avinu pursued his relationship with Light in order to redeem the spark of Mashiach, the spark of David HaMelech, that was contained in Light. Shabbos does the same thing for us. On Shabbos, we're imbued with this Neshama Yisera, with this additional consciousness of Neshama. As Sosemis explains, the goal is not to enjoy it on Shabbos alone. The goal is that it's got to leave an impression, that it leaves its mark and says to us, this is who you really are, now go find it. Go look for it. Create that consciousness on your own even in the turmoil of the weekdays, go and pursue your true definition as a neshama. The smelling of the psalmim is that we mourn the fact that this exposed, open, easy access level to the neshama is gone. But what the goal of the neshama yisera is that when Shabbos is over, a person should say to them, you know, I can be more. There's an additional dimension of me that exists that I should be pursuing. And I can't be complacent just with, you know, doing the drudgery of the regular weekdays activities. I have to strive for something deeper. So there's no Shabbos that goes by that each one of us doesn't read the Parsha of Light, that each one of us is not driven to find something concealed within ourselves that we're driven to redeem and to save. That's how he interprets this. Ein kol Shabbos v'Shabbos ein karim b'Parshas Hashalot. We're all, he says, even the word light itself, from the word luta, means it's a mad drive. A person is lahut. Chazal uses the language, lahut. A person is lahut achar memoina. A person is driven to protect their assets. That's the language of light. Parsha shel light is that Jews are crazy. And the neshamas are what make us mad. There's a drivenness about our neshamas that will not allow us to rest. So, you know, all of the isms of the world are led by Jews, and it's all this unbelievably powerful engine waiting for direction. If we'd recognize that what it's driving, striving for, is a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we'd all have a much easier time guiding that passion to where it truly belongs.